what you think you can do, you can probably do more. We have these limits that we set on ourselves, and 99% of the time, we are so wrong. I know we all have just a little more in the tank to get the degree, to score more goals, to get a pay raise that we don't think we can get within our certain business, whatever it might be. We can do so much more.
I also feel like the reason why we put these limitations on ourselves is because society also puts these limitations on us and tell us, you know, we can or cannot do these things because we do or do not fit this mold. In the story, when she comes to Bonnie and was like, hey, I want you to help me do this. And Bonnie's like, you tried this at 28. Like, what makes you think that you can do this at 61 now? Pointing to her brain, she says, this is what I didn't have then. The brain, the life experience, the chutzpah, the mental ability to really pull this off. From a societal standpoint, people are telling her she's 61 years old. Like, you can't do this. But she's like, no, I can. I have something that I didn't back when I was 28. I have so much more knowledge. I have this self-belief, this mental ability to actually pull this off, to actually do this. And I think her recognizing that and saying that just is a testament to the power of our minds and what we really do put our mind to, we can actually accomplish ourselves. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Ditto. I'm Ashley Hatch, professional soccer player for the Washington Spirit, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Matt Moore. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. Yeah, at the time of this recording, we just started school, and so it's fun to get back after it and get back on a college campus. I'm wearing my Utah hat to support my team. and at the time that this is going to be released, the college football will be underway, and campuses are just beaming again, and I just love the energy of college campuses. Funny story, I was walking on campus the other day. And I'm walking upstairs outside, and I tripped.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. It's not even wintertime. You can't blame it on the ice.
So I'm like one of the old guys now, like college students see on campus tripping over stairs. And luckily, I didn't feel too embarrassed because I'm not at that stage in life anymore where I care.
Yeah, but it's a good stage to be
nonetheless, in. I got up and I'm like, oh my gosh, my wife would have been just dying right now because she thinks that's funny. Anyways, how are you, Ash?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. Just playing soccer all day, every day. But it's fun. Our season's, I guess, starting up again. We have a regular season game coming up against Kansas City. So we're preparing for that. And I'm excited.
That's a big one.
It is a big one. Yep. They're, I think, number two on the table right now. We're number three. So
I was going to say, you're in the top three. Who's number one?
Yeah. Orlando. So it'll be a good match, and we haven't played them at all this season, so I'm excited. It's gonna be fun.
Yeah, what kind of baller like a baller on their team, who's kind of their star?
Well, they have a lot of stars, but Chiwenga is their star right now. She scores a lot of their goals. She's a strong, fast striker. Cool. So yeah, we're prepping for that, and yeah, we're excited. It'll be fun.
Awesome, I love it.
Yeah.
This is my transition into our topic today. You ready for this transition?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Clear out of left field. Here we go. Speaking of amazing women athletes. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was pretty good.
It was a good transition.
Yes. Yeah, here we go. Ashley and I want to talk about another yet incredible story that you could unpack from 50 million different angles. Hopefully we can give it justice with how we're going to talk about it today. It's not going to be too long, but again, we want to give it the airtime, if you will, that it deserves. Incredible story. So I came across this particular story, this particular woman, in 2000, I think it was 15 or 16, she was speaking at a conference that I was at, a sports psychology conference.
That's cool.
And this woman's name is Diana Nyad, N-Y-A-D. And her story just blew me away. I had no idea she even existed or what her story was until she was speaking at this conference. And she was such an incredible public speaker, motivational speaker. I was like, oh my gosh, who is this person? So Diana Nyad, to sum it up, is a long distance swimmer. And when I say long distance, you long distance swimmers out there probably have to correct me, but it's usually in the ocean. They don't just swim in a pool back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. That's reserved for like the Katie Ledeckis of the world. These people go miles in the ocean, whether it's around an island or from one island to another island or around a bay. Or in Diana's case, she went from Florida to Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And then she has a movie on Netflix. She has one that's like a dramatization of her story and then an actual kind of documentary somewhere out there as well. I read her book and it was phenomenal. The book's called Find a Way by Diana Nyad. And again, incredible story. Before I get into kind of the weeds of what she did and why she is such an incredible athlete, what do you know about her, Ash? I mean, do you know of her story? When did you come across her story, et cetera?
Yeah, we actually watched her the newest Netflix movie about her for our like team movie slash theme for the year. So we watched it in preseason, and I had never heard of her or her story or her accomplishment until we watched, sat down and watched it as a team. And it was really cool just to see her journey play out, and it was pretty remarkable. But yeah, so I just know her from this year.
And that it was on Netflix, right? Is what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the name of it?
I think it's just Nyad, but
isn't
I could
it just
be
called
wrong.
Nyad? I think you're right.
I think so too.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Highly recommend to everybody to go watch the documentary, the movie, and in my opinion, I think the book is even better. The book, like most books, just goes into more detail. And if you even are on a remote liking schedule as it pertains to reading, I think you'll love it. It's a really easy read and truly inspiring. And so let me tell the audience, why is she so inspiring? Long distance swimmer, etc. She's the first person slash woman to only, I think she still is to date, the only person to swim from the Florida Keys to Cuba. Yes, across the ocean. And she did this in 2013. She not only did this as an incredible athlete, but as an incredible older woman. She was 63 years old when she did this. For those of you that are thinking like, wow, Florida to Cuba, you know, it's pretty close, but it's not that close. Like, how far is it? It was 103 miles of continuously swimming across the ocean. The pursuit took her in just under 60 hours. I think it was 59 hours, something, to swim the length. She didn't just do it in 2013 and bam, she was good to go. It had taken her years, like the Alex Honnold story, to try to attempt and try to prepare for this. And in fact, she attempted the swim 4 different times before she was actually successful in her 5th, which was in 2013. Just incredible. And then doing it in 60 hours. And so obviously that pertains to doing it in the daylight and at nighttime. I can't imagine being in the middle of the ocean at nighttime swimming just freely. She had an entire team with her. So she had people in boats. I think it was plural, not just one boat. It might have been just one boat. Anyway,
In the movie, it's just one boat. But when I did some research, it said that her successful journey, she had a 35-person team with her. So like,
okay, probably
in the movie, like in the movie, who knows how accurate it is. I'm sure parts of it are really accurate, but like with each attempt, her team got bigger and bigger because she realized she needed more help for different reasons. And she like brought in different expertise for different things. And so I feel like as she kept going on throughout her journey, her team kind of just kept growing and growing.
Yeah. Okay. So with that in mind, so we can paint a picture of this, you know, she's swimming. And the team's not allowed to touch her or assist her physically in any way. Otherwise, she was you know, disqualified, and she had to start over, and it didn't count. So she's all by herself, just in the ocean, swimming. And for those of you that can't see, I'm swimming right now. Her team in the boat would make sure she's doing okay. So she would do like vital checks, med checks every so often. I think it was about every 90 minutes. In addition, they would like feed her like a dog from the boat. Yeah. Like she would lay on her back, and people on the boat, her team, would kind of throw things in her mouth, like globs of peanut butter and pasta and, of course, water and other things to keep her going physically. There were also in the water around her, again, not touching her because they couldn't touch her, there were shark divers on each side of her, part of this navigational team, and doctors and weather experts, et cetera. And so these shark divers would send out, I think, like these electrical underwater beams that were supposed to be a deterrent for sharks. You know, it wasn't a complete, like, in a cage. She actually attempted that, like, on her first or second try, but she didn't like being in a cage like that, and it felt weird. And so she said, let's just get rid of the cage on this fifth try. And these shark divers had these kind of beams to try to deter any interested sharks. If the sharks were really interested, they would have for sure gotten her, because they wouldn't have deterred them that much. And then in addition, some of these divers provided kind of this light stream at night, especially for her to follow. Because as you can imagine, you can become very disoriented in the ocean, especially when you're the one swimming and you're not in a boat. And then at night, and then in addition to the waves that inevitably are going to push you off course, you can kind of follow back on this light beam or this light stream. As you can imagine, just that alone would be uncountable, like, problems, challenges, hurdles. Some of them, just some, were it was the weather. So she encountered thunderstorms, waves. There's the Gulf Stream, that where she was from Cuba to Florida. And so it would push her off course the three or four times preceding the fifth successful attempt. That happened. I think she got off course so much on the third or fourth attempt that it was just way too much for her physically to be able to attempt to get back on course. And then the water was cold. And so she's swimming with this wetsuit on, trying to stay semi-warm, but hypothermia is definitely a part of the equation. She got nauseous because of the waves and the disorientation and the extreme fatigue. So she's like throwing up, some, if not most, of the food in the water that she's trying to keep down to try to sustain her body. And then, I've mentioned sharks. One huge thing that I just can't imagine doing this, that she encountered along the way were jellyfish, especially box jellyfish. So on her like second or third attempt, I forget the attempts, but one of the reasons she had to quit is she got stung by a box jellyfish. And for those that don't know much about box jellyfish, like me, they hurt really, really, really bad when you get stung, and they can for sure kill you. A lot of people that get stung by box jellyfish die because of the poison and the inflammation and what happens physiologically to a person when they're stung by these type of creatures. And she almost died. She was almost killed by a box jellyfish. And so once again, it was another deterrent to try to avoid and figure out on her way to the successful attempt that was the fifth. Mm-hmm. Anyways, with all that in mind, Ashley, what's going through your mind when you see this human being attempting such a feat? Incredible, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's really inspiring. Like you said, if you look at her timeline, her very first attempt, like you said, in 1978 was when she was only 28 years old. And she had to stop because of strong winds. They were like pushing her off course. And then, like you said, at 61 years old, she decided to try it again. So she had an attempt in August 8th in 2011, and then another attempt September 25th, 2011. That was the attempt where she got stung by I think, are box jellyfish and Man of War the same thing? Because when I Googled it, it said Man of War.
I think so, but I'm not
probably
like
the same,
too
but
yeah, competent as it pertains to my
jellyfish.
Sea creatures.
So yeah. That was the one that she had to stop because she had two stings.
Yeah.
And that was like, if she had gotten one more, I think it would have been very detrimental to her health.
Yeah, I know.
And yeah. Then in August 21st, 2012, she was only 50 miles out, but her crew pulled her because of all the things that you said, storms, jellyfish, sunburn, being exposed to all of the elements. The movie does a really good job of just showing like how physically, mentally, and emotionally taxing this is, not only on her, but on her team. And I think one thing that I loved about the movie is how her relationship with her team members, she really had to sell them on this like dream and this goal of hers. And once they were bought in, they were like bought in, and it was really cool to see them like do their very best to help her like succeed and achieve this dream of hers. But there is a part in the story, I'm assuming it was after her probably fourth attempt when her crew pulled her. She was really upset, but they were like, we're trying to like make sure you live, like we don't want you to die doing this. And so they kind of had a breaking off. This is in the movie, so I don't know how accurate this is, correct me if I'm wrong, but they had a falling out, and it was really hard for her. It was really hard for her team, but she was able to kind of like swallow her pride a little bit, go back to her team and say, you know what, like, I'm really sorry. This isn't just about me. This is about you guys as well. And I cannot do this without you. And that was such a powerful moment in the movie, because it's true. Like, she would not have been able to do this without them. And then August 31st, she attempted her fifth attempt, where she finished on September 2nd, her successful journey across the Florida Strait. And like I said earlier, she had a 35-person team, so I would imagine that team just continued to grow. But I think the reason why it grew is because they all bought into this vision. They all believed in her. And I think her resilience, just her persistence, like her perseverance, I don't know, it's pretty fascinating. And a question that I have for you, Matt, in terms of kind of just like the psychological side of it, most people aren't willing to do things this extreme at that age. We learn like in our human adolescent development classes growing up that like we do stupid things when we're younger because our brain's not fully developed, right? Or we're more willing to kind of put ourselves in dangerous situations when we're younger. But in Diana's case, she did the opposite. She attempted when she was younger, and she wasn't successful. But then when she reached the age of 61, she's like, actually, I think I can do this. So in your opinion, like, why do you think she was able to then decide at age 61 that she could accomplish this amazing feat that no one else has ever accomplished?
Yeah, there's so much to unpack. I'm going to give my opinion, but I think somehow we need to get her on the podcast in a future episode, because she would be amazing to ask her that herself and to hear it, you know, from her own mouth. And reading her book and hearing her speak at a conference in person and watching these documentaries, there were like four major takeaways for me. You mentioned most of them, and I think it's going to answer your question. Number one, and first and foremost for me, and it's essentially the subtitle of her book, Finding a Way. She had a powerful, clear vision. She wanted to do this thing, and she figured out over the course of 30 years, 35 years, longer, 40 years, something like that, how to do it. And she brought in all these pieces. She brought in all these people, literally, to assist her with this vision of her, with this goal of hers. The second for me is, you mentioned it, is this unyielding resilience. I think resilience is a muscle, and it needs to be exercised. It needs to be strengthened. And for some reason at 61, you know, maybe intuitively she thought, all right, I think I have enough years under my belt where I can actually do this now. Most 60 plus year olds are on the opposite end of the spectrum where they go, I think I'm going to ease off on life now and actually retire, literally retire from what I'm doing most of my life.
Yeah.
But for her, it was like this shift of, I have gained all this knowledge, all this experience. I've met all these amazing people. I think I'm now ready to do this, and I need to get my body into shape to be able to do that. And I think a lot of people, especially in, at least in the United States, at that age, don't recognize that you can still be in physiologically in really great shape. Mm-hmm. It's at times, and this is for all of us, not only at their that age, getting your mind to agree with the body and vice versa, getting your body to agree with the mind. And so her unyielding resilience for me was enormous to be able to attempt it. And then when you're in the actual attempts, I mean, she did this 5 different times and encountered weather and sharks and box jellyfish and nausea and fatigue and all this stuff.
Mm.
Again, my definition, adversity plus positive adaptation equals resilience. And that's what she would do. She would encounter these challenges, this adversity, and then adapt. And then a small tweak and adaption, and then another adaption, and then another adaption, until ultimately she finds success. Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned as well, Ash, like she was able to redefine age and limits. I mean, these stories like Alex Honnold and Diana Nyad, for so many reasons are so interesting, but I think one of the overarching reasons why we're so attracted to this is it's redefining what we can do as human beings. And in her case, it's redefining what we can do as human beings, but also what we can do at certain ages, you know, on the age spectrum, so to speak. And so for all of us, it's, at least for me, I think it's a clear display of what you think you can do, you can probably do more.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have these limits that we set on ourselves, especially psychologically. And 99% of the time we are so wrong. We can do so much more, whether it's 60% more, 10% more, 30% more. I don't know what that is, but I know we all have just a little more in the tank to get the degree that we don't think we can actually accomplish, to score more goals that we don't think we can score, to get a pay raise that we don't think we can get within our certain business, whatever it might be, or swim from Florida to Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
It's just astounding to me. And then, you know, on top of all that, Ash, like it's once you're in the moment, psychologically, what do you do? Like, how do you stay present? How do you continue to revisit this muscle of strength and strengthening of resiliency and continue to push and push and push until you reach the shores of Cuba, literally and figuratively? She did a number of things. So she specifically and deliberately trained her mind, especially in and around meditation and mindfulness, so that when, not if, inevitably, psychologically, she was waning and thinking about things that weren't effective or efficacious in those moments, that she could do something in those moments to bring herself back and continue to swim one arm, one leg kick after the other for 60 hours. So some of the things that she did, I don't know if it went over in this particular movie, it probably did, is she sang songs. So it talked about in the book how she memorized and sang over 80 plus different songs. So in training for these attempts, and especially the fifth one, she had memorized, she had all these songs in her memorization that she would turn to. And she would sing them, and she would sing them, and sing them, and sing them. And then in addition, when she got tired of singing some of these songs, here's these mind tricks, and they're so effective when we are good at it. Instead of singing, she would also count. So she would count in Spanish, in English, and in French. And it said that she would count up to 200 in these languages and then try to count back down in all three of these different languages. And so she was singing songs, she was counting in different languages, and then occasionally having kind of conversations when she could, not always because her face is in the water, with her team, and finding ways to just stay present and to continue to strengthen this present awareness muscle of resiliency and do what she needed to do. So those are a number of thoughts that come to my mind in terms of major takeaways from this incredible story.
Yeah. No, that's fascinating. I think back to what you were talking about earlier of kind of these limitations that we put on ourselves. I also feel like the reason why we put these limitations on ourselves is because society also puts these limitations on us, whether it's age, gender, whether you have a degree or not, social status, you know, just income, whatever it is, society tends to put these limitations on us and tell us, you know, we can or cannot do these things because we do or do not fit this mold. And in the story, her best friend Bonnie, when she comes to Bonnie, was like, hey, I want you to help me do this. And Bonnie's like, you tried this at 28. Like, what makes you think that you can do this at 61 now? And she said exactly kind of what you're talking about, Matt, is it was her mind. And I'm going to butcher this quote because there's a word in it that I have no idea how to pronounce. H-U-T-Z-P-A. Do you know what that word is?
H-U-T-Z-P-A.
Google says. Chutzpah.
Chutzpah.
It means extreme self-confidence or
audacity. Okay, I've heard of that. Yeah.
So anyway, I'm gonna give you the quote. Chutzpah. Anyway, okay. So her friend asked her, like, what makes you think you can do this? And she says, pointing to her brain, she says, this is what I didn't have then. The brain, the life experience, the chutzpah, the ability, the mental ability to really pull this off. And I think that's so cool because, you know, we may, from a societal standpoint, you're 60, people are telling her she's 61 years old, like, you can't do this. But she's like, no, I can. I have something that I didn't back when I was 28. I have so much more knowledge. I have this self-belief, this mental ability to actually pull this off, to actually do this. And I think her recognizing that and saying that just is a testament to the power of our minds and what we really do put our mind to, we can actually accomplish ourselves. And so, I think that quote goes perfectly, aligns perfectly with what you were saying and why she was able to pull this off. And I just, I think it's just very admirable that she was willing to tell people, like, no, you're wrong. Like, I can do this. And that probably is also fueled her purpose a little bit too, because so many people were telling her that she couldn't. Sometimes that can also be super powerful. But I think it's just really inspiring.
Totally. You know, it's funny. I just shared a post on LinkedIn a week or so ago that it relates to this beautifully. And I want to invite you, Ashley, while I'm telling this story, to think of an experience in your own life that you can share. So I know I've briefly alluded to this on this podcast before, and I'm going to share my post, what I did on LinkedIn, with you all here. So hopefully not everybody follows me on LinkedIn, so this isn't like regurgitating information. Again, when I was a student, I was a master's student. I've never been the academic type. I've never been the straight A guy, sit in front of the classroom. In fact, I remember being in my doctoral program and the teacher at the front was talking about this. And he goes, most of you doctoral students here have been straight A students. And, you know, school's kind of been your thing up until now. And I raise my hand and I go, not me. I've never been that person and I never will be. Anyways, when I was a master's student, I came and confided in an advisor and I let them know, or I talked to them about wanting to pursue a PhD. And their response was, I just don't know if you're a PhD student, or I don't know if you're a PhD type or the materialistic type of student that needs to happen for you to get into programs. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, okay. There's a shot to my self-confidence. Yeah. But I went to pursue my PhD. I got a PhD and I did it. And it wasn't to be like, ha ha, sucker, look what I did. And I sent them a picture of me holding up my degree, which would have been kind of funny. And it wasn't because I was particularly smart. It was because I knew deep down that I could do something hard. I had never been the type of student, again, to go get a PhD. And still to this day, when I tell friends what I do for a living and I have a PhD, sometimes I go, really? You did that? Like, I knew you from high school and you were just the opposite. Anyways, moral of the story, similar to Diana Nyad's experience, is I knew that I could do something hard. At that point in my life, for some reason in my mind, it was, okay, I can do this because I can do hard things and I'm going to pursue this and I'm going to accomplish this. Mm-hmm. Similar to that experience. So here's my question for you, Ash. Have you had anything similar happen in your life in terms of maybe you not believing in you and then you go and do something to prove yourself wrong or just to get it done? Or maybe like me, or maybe even like Diana, other people have said, no, you can't do this. You're not good enough, or you're not old enough, or you're too young, or whatever it might be. And then what happened? Have you had those type of experiences, big or small, in your life?
Oh, yeah. So many. I feel like especially in the sports world, when you just have everyone's opinions, whether it's coaches or parents or other players. One that does come to mind as you're sharing yours, when I was probably around 12 or 13, we actually lived in St. George, Utah at the time. So I grew up in Southern California, but in middle school, we moved to St. George, Utah for like a year and a half. And then we moved to Arizona where I finished out middle school and the rest of high school. And because we were from Southern California, there was a trainer there that my dad would, anytime we were visiting, he would take us there to train with him. He was really good. He had trained like a lot of pros. He was a pro himself. And it was just really good training sessions. And I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot. It was kind of scary and intimidating because he expected the best. And so like, if he messed up, you would hear about it. But I think we paid for like 6 sessions, and when we had moved, we wanted to finish them. So we came back and we did our last 2 or 3 or whatever it was. And then afterwards I was getting in the car and my dad was having a conversation with the coach and kind of just like asking him what he thought about me as a player, my skill level, my potential, all that, all the stuff that parents always want to hear about their child. And I remember my dad came back in the car and he didn't say anything. And I kind of like pride, and I was like, hey, so like, what were you guys talking about? And I could tell he didn't really want to tell me. And then he finally was like, all right, like, I didn't really want to tell you because I didn't want it to like ruin your confidence or anything. But he said, you're a good player, but not a great player. And I was just kind of like, all right, like, what does that even mean? Like, I don't know. And I just remember having a conversation with my dad, and he was just like, well, like, use it as motivation to become a great player. And from that moment on, I kind of just use it as motivation. Like, and we would joke sometimes when I'd have like a really good game and score a bunch of goals or like actually do something like really successful, and be like, oh, but you're a good player, not a great player.
That's awesome.
And so that was one moment I feel like early on where I got feedback that maybe wasn't, you know, all sunshine and rainbows, but I definitely used it as motivation to continue to improve. And also I wasn't going to let like one person's opinion, you know, derail me from my goals and my dreams and my aspirations. So, yeah, that's one story that comes to mind.
It's amazing when we are actually able to not let other people's opinions about us define our potential. Like, you got to believe in yourself. And if you don't, start to. Start to find little ways to believe that you're capable of performing XYZ. Little baby steps towards something that ultimately maybe can be bigger. You know, with all these stories to say, and especially Diana's story, again, don't limit yourself. Because we do it way too often as human beings. It's important to change our relationship with how we relate with ourselves and how we believe in ourselves. You know, it's a topic that I consistently have with athletes, coaches, students, et cetera, in my professional life. It's self-confidence and self-doubt. We limit ourselves, especially psychologically. If we can change that, not get rid of it, because we're always going to have self-doubt. We're human beings. But just change how we relate to it. It's going to make such a world of difference. And you'll be able to have the Florida to Cuba swims in your life, whatever those might look like. And so hopefully it's an inspiring story for you all that are listening. I highly, highly encourage you to, yes, go watch the documentaries or the movies, but also to read her book, Find a Way by Diana Nyad. I promise it'll be well worth your time. You probably won't put down the book just like me. And she probably has a bunch of speeches on YouTube as well that you can go look up. That's kind of my thoughts. I'm hoping that everyone listening will find interest and passion and motivation behind it. So,
yeah. I think I want to close it out with what she told reporters after she had finished her swim. She said, "I have three messages. One is we should never, ever give up. Two is you're never too old to chase your dreams. And three is it looks like a solitary sport, but it's a team." And I feel like those are really good life messages to kind of just live by. And I think it's really cool that she was able to embody all of those lessons throughout her journey and then share that with the world. So anyway, thanks for your thoughts of the story, and go look into Diana Nyad.
Yes, like, share, love, well, whatever this episode, and then go look up her story, everybody. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Yep. Alrighty.
Have a good day.
We're out.